KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I am speaking with Azalea Renfield, the Executive Director of the Williams and Russell CDC, and Bryson Davis, the Board Chair, about their work on the Williams and Russell Project and what it means to the community in the Albina neighborhood of Portland. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking the time to talk with us. So, Azalea, you are the new Executive Director of the Williams and Russell Community Development Corporation, and I want to dig into some of what your guys' work looks like. But for starters, and this is a question for both of you, what is Williams and Russell CDC?
So it is a relatively new nonprofit that was formed from the project working group that was developed through Prosper Portland of a bunch of community members, nonprofit community leaders, to determine what to do with a plot of land that Legacy Health was donating back to the community to develop, to right the wrong of past condemnation and neighborhood destruction.
The work of this organization centers around the property on Williams and Russell. Can you talk me through some of the history there?
So the history is really the guiding part. In the 70s, the city worked with Emmanuel Hospital before it was sold to Legacy to go around and condemn and take all the property around the hospital so that the hospital could then buy it for cheap and have room to expand. Because this was the era of redlining, people didn't get fair price for the homes. Businesses were just kicked out. One of the pieces of our block was a big commercial area. It was kind of the center of the black business district before all of this happened. And all of that went away. So they went through and did all of that. Legacy Health has bought Emmanuel relatively recently. The hospital has expanded and they built new things, but they never developed the site that we're talking about here. And because of that, the city went back and said, hey, we want the land back. And Legacy, in negotiation with the city, came to a resolution where Legacy would donate the land to the community. And then Prosper Portland put together that group of community leaders, the project working group, to determine what should go on the land and how it should be developed and how we could maximize the restorative, reparative benefit of the project.
If I recall from my history lessons about this, the city declared some of that entire area as blighted in order to be able to use eminent domain there was a lot that was built in that era in that area, but this is specifically about Emmanuel Hospital, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They declared it blighted, and there were some shady tactics around that as well. My understanding, and I haven't gone too in depth on the research here, but my understanding is that there was some buying some homes, letting them sit, and then using those homes that were just sitting and decaying to justify some of the blight designation as well. So.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not one of Portland's happiest parts of the history, I would say.
No, but it also happened everywhere. And, we might get into it a little bit later, but one of the main goals of the organization is to be a model, a roadmap for other cities, other communities to do similar things. One thing that's good about this project, and I got to give Prosper a lot of credit for this, is they brought in a bunch of different community organizations and a bunch of different community leaders. And so once we brought everybody to the table and started moving, there was a little bit of a unifying effect to it. You kind of have everybody playing on the same team. You don't have organizations necessarily competing like they otherwise might, in other areas for funding or for the ability to get an RFP accepted for a project or something like that. And so it really kind of became a more collaborative effort than sometimes you see. And that's kind of something that we've been trying to carry over. We built it into our organization's bylaws where you've got to have three representatives of three different community organizations, as well as Black business owners, and as well as people who whose family was displaced as part of the original hospital expansion. And so really kind of keeping all of those people at the table, so it's not just my vision, it's not just Azalea's vision, mm-hmm. it's kind of the collective vision of what the project can be.
Well, let's go to that vision. What are Williams and Russell CDC's plans for the property?
Yeah, we're actually getting ready to go through a strategic planning session, because you know the project came before the organization did in many ways. Because you know when the land was handed over, it has had to form an entity for that to be there. But we had to build up the organization, but in the same time still keep the project moving. So that project working group turned into like somewhat of a organization. And then we formed the organization. Some people left and did other things, and some people came on. And now they just hired me 3 months ago. So we're now actually forming our organization, and we're going to be going through a strategic plan on the 26th and 27th, or sorry, 25th and 26th of May to start getting, seeing what it's going to look like in terms of programs, in terms of service. But with the sole mission and goal is to get this $115 million initiative going. It's going to be 20 affordable homes for purchase, which is a huge thing because about wealth generation. Then you're going to have 88 units, or is it 85? 88 units.
It's 88 or 85.
Yeah, something like that. 88, 85 affordable home units between 2 to 3 bedrooms for rent. And then we're going to have this 3-story business hub. So when you think about community development in terms and with economic development, wealth generation, economic development with the business hub, and then just everyday living for affordable housing, that 1.7 acres is going to represent something that's really beautiful and hopefully can serve as like kind of like a prototype or blueprint, if you will, for other cities to kind of mimic the same thing about what restorative justice actually looks like and how do we do this in a collaborative method. One of the things that Bryson said that I love is that bring and prosper and allowing all the people to come in to be in a room where it happens, not to quote Hamilton, but to be all in a room for we all can have something to say so we won't be missing anybody is super crucial. I have an amazing board of directors that are all so vested in this project, that cares about this project, and our city leaders, Prosper Portland, the Housing Bureau, all these different people at the table to actually help us get this project through the goal has been a really wonderful process. And though we're still trying to figure out, there's going to be some hiccups along the way, your mayor, the mayor here, literally made a declaration saying there will be hiccups and that we want to get this right. So I think that was such a huge thing to see that a mayor stopped for a moment in time and said, wait, we want to right this wrong. And not only are we going to right this wrong, we want to give you something towards it so that you guys can get back on your track and we're committed through the process the whole way through. That's huge. You don't see that. Usually it was a community-led effort, but this kind of came from a different angle to get this project going.
Well, there is this $115 million attached to it. Can you speak to where that funding is from?
So it comes from several places. The biggest contributor is the city at this point. The city is putting in at least $10 million from Prosper to the business hub. We've also getting money from PSEF, which is almost $5 million for the business hub. PSEF's also putting money into the homes and will likely put money into the apartments. The projects are all on different timelines, and so sometimes the funding isn't always at the same time. And then we're getting money from the Housing Bureau for the affordable apartments. We are also getting a good amount of money from the state. So the townhomes are going to get some funding from OHCS, as well as the apartments are going to get a bunch of money from the state through, you know, their normal affordable housing program. So those are the two biggest pots of funding, but we also have gotten kind of consistent support from Meyer Memorial Trust, who's helped fund our operations, as well as all the way back to the project working group phase. We've gotten federal appropriations dollars. Both Oregon senators as well as Blumenauer were very key to us getting those. The business hub got $850, and the affordable homes got $750. And I believe the apartments put in for some as well. I don't know if that's been finalized. Yeah. So those are the main pots. It's mostly government funded, and then obviously the land and the equity that comes with owning the land is going to come from legacy.
Right. Well, like you mentioned, the redevelopment plans include affordable apartments, which, you know, we continue to be in a housing crisis in Oregon. That's certainly important. But the project also includes plans for home ownership, which you touched on, Azalea. Mm-hmm. Can we go into that specifically? What is the importance of that component?
Yeah, when we think about affordable housing, you know, it's too often we always think about it's just get somebody into a unit and they'll be able to either pay the rent. We made the place available, but what do we do from there? How do we make that sustainable? And when we think about affordable housing, it's kind of like you're only there as good as what you produce, right? But if we build in like actual wealth things, home ownership is the key for a lot of people to get stability in their lives. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how we send our kids at school. That's how we deal with medical bills. That's how we deal with whatever it is we need to deal with because we have that equity sitting on that house. So if we don't have that, are we really creating something that people can believe in and have their kids be taken care of and so on and so forth? So we think about community development is not independent of economic development. And that's what's so important about this project because it's involving everything that's community. In the center of those affordable housing units, in the center of the home ownership piece, in the center of the Black Business Hub, there's also a plaza there that's going to be there for community gathering, restoring the visions that were lost, restoring the community and culture and ideas and, you know, fun things, right? The community piece where it's like a gathering place. But it's also so much more going on there. It is like literally the epicenter that we, at least I hope it to be, where we can see what communities really look like when they're thriving. There's a reason why we have areas like the Pearl District that are notably places where people want to be. There's wealth creation. There's a lot of stores. There's retail. There's parks. There's stores. Like, there's community. So that Pearl District becomes something, a place that people want to be. I'm hoping that the Hill Block, formerly the Hill Block, could be a place like that, epicenter for people to feel that same feeling. So now when people say, where do you live? They say, I'm on Hill Block. And people can feel good and best about, the Hill Block. And it becomes a matter of contemporary places to be, just like the Pearl District.
When we were, this is before we put out the RFP to pick the development team who's helping do the design, we sent out a community survey to see what people really wanted to see on the site. And mm-hmm. housing was pretty big. Yeah, housing's been a problem in Portland for several years now. But three other things that were really important that came out of that: community space, entrepreneurial support, but really all of that under the umbrella of wealth creation. You know, one of the big things that was lost when they went through and effectively demolished the neighborhood was a lot of the wealth that was in those businesses, a lot of the wealth that were in the homes, that was all lost. And so we're trying to use the project to kind of maximize that benefit and help provide a space and support to recreate that wealth in the community.
Well, yeah, I want to ask about that specifically. You mentioned the Black Business Hub as part of the development of this block. What do you envision that looking like?
So, you know, there's the physical, what's it going to look like in terms of the building? And we've got, you know, the renderings keep changing as we go further and further through the design process. But in terms of kind of the feel and the service and what's going to be in it, I mean, a big component is going to be supporting retail and food vendors. That is going to be a big part of the bottom level. And then up top, we also want to make sure that we've got co-working space, that we've got a home for organizations that support businesses, that we've got relatively low rent office space for businesses who are just starting out to be able to be there and start growing their businesses. And as many of those services and professionals that they would need access to as they're going through those early stages, we want to provide that access through the business hub. And so we really kind of want it to be, you know, a little bit of a one-stop shop. If you're starting a new business or you've got a relatively young business, it's the place that you can go to get support, to get access to funding, to have a place to work that is affordable and can help you grow your business to the next level.
Right, right. So, Azalea, you mentioned the strategic planning that's happening later this month. Mm-hmm. What are some of the steps along the way in the process? Like, what's going on maybe even this whole next year?
Yeah, we've been having a lot of meetings about just moving on with our construction. We have three different projects that have different timelines. And so our first project is going to be the 20 affordable homes for sale And that's supposed to be done by spring of 26.
End of June of 26.
Yeah. So that's quick.
So those have to be built and ready to be delivered by then.
Yeah. So that's coming. So we're trying to get that piece moving and get it going along. And we're working closely with the housing board to make sure that those people who have preference policies are going to have access to that those places first. But that's one project. There's so many other projects, you know, the affordable housing part, and then you got the Black Business Hub. But there's so many, because there's so many moving parts, all those things are wonderful, but we can't do without funding. So we're really trying to increase our ability to actually bring community partners involved, because this is what's so wonderful about this project. This is not a private business. This is not a private enterprise. This is not, you know, equity shareholders or anything like that. This is about justice and community still. And because it's a community effort, we heavily, heavily rely on the community to help us get through the finish line. And again, we talked about the government partners, but we also have nonprofit helpers as well. And we're all in this together. So right now we're just having conversations with other organizations with shared vision in terms of community building, making sure we have reciprocity built in, how we help one another. We help you, you help us. And we kind of just keep this kind of like reciprocity thing happening. So as we kind of make our way through, and again, this is month three, once we get that strategic plan, I think that's really, really where we're going to really get into, because all the board of directors will be there, will be saying, what do we really want Williams & Russell to be? Because Williams & Russell is not just, Williams & Russell project is about getting the buildings done. But in terms of like the organization, what is it that we want to do? What do we want to serve outside? Are we going into property management? Are we going into showing how to restore justice around different communities that were blighted? Like, what is Williams & Russell's charge? What's going to get us? What are we trying to do? Do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I mean, there's really kind of two blocks of timelines. There's the development and the building of the building, which are kind of staggered. Homes are coming first. The business hub is probably coming second. Apartments are probably coming third. Those are kind of set timeline-wise by your construction piece. But then there is the what do we do after? What comes after the buildings? Do we do other projects? Do we focus only on supporting the programming that we have in the business hub? How do we build that out and then kind of build off the original project to continue providing that benefit to our community and maybe other communities?
Maybe other communities. There's yet to be seen where it's all going to go. What is something that you wish people knew about this project?
You know, I think one thing that is hard to see in this project, and really part of the reason, part of the impetus for having this project at all, is how poorly the government addressed and dealt with the community in the past, but also how a lot of our current government leaders and current government organizations are trying to repair some of that damage. I think about, you know, stories about the Portland Development Commission, which was Prosper before they changed the name, and how different those stories are to my experience working with the Prosper members. And even aside from the community support of the government, the support for green energy, improving buildings, and having pots of funding for that. You know, we talked with some folks from Raleigh, North Carolina, who they've got a similar project. And before Azalea joined, Anule, our development manager, and I talked with people from Asheville, North Carolina, who they've got a big reparations committee built into their city government. And they just don't have the broader government support for those projects that we have here. We had support from the local government, we had support from the state government, we had support from our federal delegation to get money and to get the project off the ground, and also to remove some of the normal red tape barriers that you'd run into when it comes to development. And that is not the case everywhere. And I think, you know, as much as it's easy to be really negative on the role of government in creating a lot of the problems, and it's important to hold the government's feet to the fire with continuing to support these efforts and to solve these issues that they've created. I think we can't lose sight of how much progress our government here has made in that area and how much support a lot of the people are giving now.
Mm-hmm. Is this based off of an existing model, or is this something that is more innovative based off of like the particular situation with the Emmanuel Hospital development?
It's a lot of it's new. I mean, you know, obviously people build affordable apartment buildings every day, and so that section of the project can be relatively cookie cutter based off of the, you know, your normal funding models, your normal development models, that sort of thing. But the project as a whole, I mean, there's not really a model that we were able to look to say, you know, we want to do it like that. It was really kind of building it from scratch, surveying the community, finding out what people wanted, what they really wanted to see, looking at what Portland really needed, and then putting those pieces together into what could this look like built up, and then trying to make that a reality, trying to fill that with programming to maximize its benefits. Yeah, it's been kind of a starting with your goals and trying to use the all the various tools and professionals and stuff to get to realize those goals, but there's not really been much of a template. And, you know, part of the goal of this project is hopefully to provide that template for other people.
Mm-hmm. And the biggest part on that is that is not arbitrary, because we are representing the community. And so it's easy to go to those meetings and sit with people and say, this is what they want, this is what we'd like to see. And certainly there'll be concessions made on both parts, but we're both kind of holding each other accountable. But coming from a government background, Bryson is so right that even though government might have done this, did some things that weren't so great, that was the 1960s, the 70s, people have changed, we're at a different time, that people can change at any given point, because they've committed to be at the table like we are. I think when you really think about public service and what it looks like to be in a world and community, that none of us can do anything without the government. Can't do anything without us, and we can't do anything without government. There's a kind of like a check and balance, if you will. People don't like to hear that, but there's like, it's like a hard truth. It's a hard fact that we have systems in places for reasons. But I think in the past, there weren't feedback loops built into anything. Now, government has to hear community voice. We have waiting time to say, we want to hear community input for 2 weeks, so we have to hold on a project. There's no goal without community input. It happens, of course, we're going to acknowledge that, but less likely than most, because they have to get the community feedback. And some people will look around and say, is this really going to happen? Is it real? And I'm here to tell you all, even with Bryson, we want this to happen. The city is committed. We have a lot of people committed on this project. You've seen all the news. You've seen all the headlines. We're trying to do some great things here. And we want to let you know that, hold us accountable, because we're going to hold you accountable as well. We want to do this, and that we're all committed to it. So I think that's important to really mention, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's very cool to see this sort of innovation in what government's role can be in remedying this past harm, and right, acknowledging that what was lost can't be exactly one-to-one recreated, but, you know, thinking creatively about what that space can be used for now. I'm curious about what the role has been for families who were displaced by the original construction.
So, various roles. I mean, again, as I mentioned before, we have space, but our bylaws require us to have at least two board members who they're specifically, or they represent a group of people who was originally displaced. Though I think through our board, we have at least three, maybe even four people whose family were displaced from the original hospital expansion. And so that's the first role, is always having them involved on the board and giving direction to the organization as a whole. The other piece is, you know, as we get to different phases, we're trying to go back out, and connect with those people who were displaced, those people who lost businesses, those people who lost homes, to say, all right, What do you want to see here? What do you think of this design? You know, we recently just reached out to people on the design of the homes. Mm-hmm. Just say, we've got these floor plans, we've got these home designs. Is this something that would work, well for you? And so trying to reach out and bring people in at every step of the way who aren't already part of the board, who aren't already part of the partner organizations, because some of our partner organizations also have a lot of people who are displaced on it. Keeping them involved that way is important too.
Mm-hmm. And just to piggyback on that, it's funny because what's ironic about this project is even though all that stuff occurred, our slogan, our motto is building futures and restoring heritage. So this is a future-driven project. It's, you know, it's seeing the glass half full. Like, we're changing our mindset about, like, we know that stuff happened, that ugly, icky stuff happened. We're not getting rid of it because it's definitely on the website for people to see, for us to remember, but not to kind of, like, pounce on it, but to really be like, we're going to forward about this positivity initiative to go forward. This is fun stuff. This is exciting. It's buzzworthy. People are excited. There's so much interest around this project. Even like Bryson said, getting a phone call from someone way in on the other side of the country. Like, people are watching, and I think there's some hope in that. And it's like, you know, if you get the right stakeholders and bring everybody to the table, it's like a feel good project. And I think I'm surprised on how cohesive this organization has been with the government. I'm shocked. And even though we go in the room, we smile, we greet each other, and it's like, okay, we're going to take. People are excited. And it's like, it's not like a bureaucrat just sitting there like, okay, what next? It's like real investment. You can feel when it's authentic and it's real. You're going to sense that, and it's a place that you want to be. And so many people want to be part of this project. That's saying something. And even though bad things have happened, but people are like, you know what? Let me give it a shot. What do you have to lose? Like, it's, you know, we got so much to gain if we just take a chance. And I think people are slowly, and of course it's not going to happen overnight, but there's a relationship. This is all about fostering relationships, keeping relationships, because relationships matter. How you talk to people matters. How you if you don't keep your word matters. So that's why we have those meetings and we're like, did you get your deliverables done? It's like, oh, I got it done. It's like, we start to respect each other's time. It's a professional business first, and then social graces are in that. And then it's like, we all have a shared common goal, and that's what keeps us going. It's not personal.
Yeah, and going back a little bit to the involving the people who are displaced, one of the mechanisms too that goes into the housing components of this is the Housing Bureau's preference policy, which starts with the people who were displaced in that neighborhood, and they kind of go to the front of the line in terms of whether or not they get considered for both the rental housing as well as the home ownership component. And so, you know, they're going to be at the front of the line too when it comes to moving back in, buying or renting places to live on the block.
Do you have any final thoughts before we wrap up?
One thing which has been great recently. So we hired Azalea starting in March, and at that point we went from a fully volunteer to organization who had proper full-time staff. And yeah, I got to say that shift has been amazing, and really kind of kick-started everything and really lit the fire under people and got things organized that in a way that on all volunteer organization couldn't do. And so just been excited to have her on and now leading and running the organization.
See, it's good when your boss is happy, America. It's very good. I'm honored and I'm pleased. I'm happy about that.
Well, thank you both so much for taking the time to speak with me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
That was my conversation with two of the folks from Williams and Russell Community Development Corporation, Azalea Renfield, the executive director, and Bryson Davis, the board chair. We spoke about their work on the Williams and Russell project and what it means to the community in the Albina neighborhood of Portland. More information on the project is online at williamsrussellcdc.org. You've been listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Thanks for being with us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Postmodern, a reaction against the ideas and values of modernism. Avant-garde, new, unusual, and experimental ideas.